Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, September 23rd. We are now officially in fall.
Welcome. Oh, and my milk is out of date. I remember September 22nd. I said I had one more day for my 4-liter thing that has a bit of milk, 2% milk in it. Okay.
Thank you for that update, Peter. That was really...
Well, this is very contemporary. That's what they do on Facebook, all your little meaningless personal stuff. So we're contemporary now.
All right. Well, we have an interesting show for you today. We're going to start off with a bit of a story from Nanaimo about an effort to reduce food waste through gleaning. We also have a report from Montreal about... authorities removing political and campaign signs because they just recently had a federal by-election there that were supportive of Israel. Or, sorry, not supportive of Israel, but critical of Israel. So we'll have that report for you in a little bit. What are you going to be talking about today,
Peter? Well, I'm going to talk about the 1941 film Buck Privates with Abner Costello. Now, we talked to... Weeks ago, I talked about National Lampoon's Animal House.
Yep.
And Stephen was sort of a bit hurt. I was attacking the movie. But I'm going to bring up the problematic aspects I find with this other film, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll put into context what I don't like about Animal House. Oh, there we go.
All right.
And hopefully Stephen's going to come in. He's not here right now.
Yep. Do you want to offend him again?
No, I'm not going to defend. I'm not.
I'm just joking. We also have Gardening with Embark, Bird Note, and much more. So one quick comment. Do you only go by the Best Buy data, or do you just bring it up and give it a sniff?
Well, the thing is that if we get the smaller size, it's kind of more expensive for what you get. So if you do, in a sense, get the 4-liter, you don't drink at all. But it saves you money because you get a bit more for the buck.
I actually do the same thing because it's like $4. These aren't exact price. $4.50 for a 2-liter and $5.50 for a 4-liter. And it's like, okay, well, if I drink 3 liters and throw out a liter, that's still a better deal. And usually I manage to get through the whole thing.
Well, yeah, you got a family, don't you? I just got little old me.
Well, you know, use it in cooking. Use it for morning cereals.
Yeah.
I have to have a lot of cup of coffee to use the 4 liters of milk, but I use it for that as well.
Okay.
There we go. Your shopping and household finance tip for this week, courtesy of Peter.
I don't have
and
any.
Agnes.
I mean, I live next to that evil transnational Walmart. I live in. There are 3 towers directly west of Lougheed Mall.
Yeah.
And I'm in it. I'm in that. So it's been for 7 years and a bit over 2 months. It sort of just makes sense. You go there and you buy what you buy. It's so close.
It does. In a fast-changing area you live in.
Oh, you know what? It's funny you say fast-changing. They were talking about, like, the Safeway closed in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And they still haven't torn it down, or they still haven't... They sort of... as a storage area. So it's just stagnant. Right. Like they have those towers. I know it looks that way, but I've been there for 7 years and mm-hmm. it's more stagnant than anything else. It is.
But there are lots of towers going up in that area around the SkyTrain station, the Lougheed SkyTrain station, and then all along North Road there where the SkyTrain also runs and sort of along where...
Well, this is an important thing because we don't know how many of these are just empty condos. owned by overseas, as we say, we're in the unceded territory of overseas mainland Chinese landlords. I mean, so we don't know how much I don't know the information. If they filled the one over my area, I don't know how much they're filled up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brentwood has a whole lot of them now, so I don't know. I mean, hopefully they're filled up with people who are lawyers who can afford to be in them, basically.
Well, it'd be a shame in the middle of a housing crisis to have all sorts of empty housing. And well, that's why at various points the government has tried to do some stuff to discourage residences being left vacant.
Well, they want to do something that's expensive.
Yeah.
To get money. I mean, so they don't do the low level. And I think that's what you're finding, because I really don't know how – I mean, the thing is built already, and I don't know how many people are actually in there.
Right.
So there you go.
All right. For our first story today, we have a story from our friends at CHLY in Nanaimo. This is created part of as part of the local journalism initiative. And as I mentioned last week, we have our new LJI, as we say for short, Local Journalism Initiative reporter Ellen Taylor here at CJSF. Her first story started hitting the air last week, and you can expect to see a whole bunch more local stories happening on Speak Up programs going forward. It's kind of quite exciting to have those resources put into reporting on our local community. Here we are with, again, from our friends at CHLY in Nanaimo.
This is a CHLY news update. Last year, over 3,000 pounds of produce were saved in Nanaimo from ending up in the landfills because of a local group of gleaners. A partnership between the Nanaimo Food Share Society and the Nanaimo Community Garden Society runs a volunteer gleaning program that reduces food waste and redistributes food to community organizations. Volunteers pick surplus fruit, vegetables, and other crops that would otherwise go unpicked and end up in landfills or left for wild animals. Lee Samia is a gleaning coordinator for the Nanaimo Gleaning Program. She says the program runs with local volunteers picking fruit trees generously made available by the tree owners who need their trees picked. She says the joint program started in 2003 when they started seeing a need in the community to deal with the amount of fruit that were going to waste. From there, the program expanded.
So now we have a huge roster of gleaners, and we have equipment, and we can manage to pick, or at least try to pick, most of the fruit trees that get called into us. Of course, you know, sometimes things are overripe, or sometimes the trees are too tall, or the terrain is unsafe, or for whatever reason, maybe it's overripe.
Last year, the program had 83 volunteers and were able to donate over 300 pounds of produce to be redistributed in the community. Samia says tree owners can take up to a third of the produce collected by the gleaners, but as the owners usually have picked what they want by the time they use the program, they usually take around 5% of the produce collected.
The gleaners can take all the rest, in fact, but not necessarily for their personal use. Gleaners are very generous with friends and family, and so they redistribute it. You know, maybe their workplaces, agencies that they know of, church groups they're involved with.
She says allowing the gleaners to redistribute the produce how they would like means the produce can reach more organizations across the community.
And it also means that if it goes to a lot of smaller groups or individuals, housing projects, whatever, it means that that produce can be dealt with pretty efficiently. Whereas sometimes if one organization is the beneficiary, they're inundated with produce and then they're not able to deal with it before it rots.
In addition to fruit trees, the program can glean various other fruits and vegetables, including peas, blueberries, raspberries, corn, and cherries. Samia says if a small amount of the fruit they pick rots or spoils, it can affect the remainder of the fruit. So a lot of the fruit they pick does not often last as long as commercial fruits.
And so a lot of big places don't have the facilities to be able to store, sort, and then redistribute large quantities of that really delicate produce in a timely fashion. So by redistributing it in much smaller amounts, more widely, we're able to find homes for the produce. So
she explains when they are picking fruit and they find some that have gone bad, They will deal with it there right away. She says most owners have green bins in which they put the rotting fruit in. Samia says a gleaning project is perfect for people who have an overabundance of produce that they cannot deal with themselves but want to make sure it gets used. She also highlights the camaraderie that comes with having gleaners come and glean your property.
It is really nice to be able to go and pick fruit with a couple people and just chat and be working towards an end that you think is, you know, really worthy out in the community somewhere you're not really familiar with. It's lovely.
According to WildSafe BC, an organization that offers education on preventing conflict with wild animals, fallen fruit from fruit trees is a large attractant that can attract bears and other wild animals into residential areas. Samia says that people live in the areas where there may be a lot of bears. Sometimes they will have conservation officers refer to them to glean certain people's properties.
And we can do emergency picks to get fruit off the trees just so that we can make sure that bears aren't tempted with fruit trees as an attractant.
Right now, sign up to be a volunteer gleaner is closed for the year, but Samia says it will open for the 2025 season in early spring with hopes to have the orientation training done before cherries are in season in the springtime. More information on how to sign up for the program or become a gleaner can be found on their website at nanaimocommunitygardens.ca/gleaning. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
And now from local artists Future Star, they have a new album called It's About Time. This track is called For the Good or For the Worse, We Start to See the Rocks Move.
For good or for worse, we see the rocks begin to move. Begin to move.
Future Star, and it's a long title. For good or worse, we see the rocks begin to move.
I hope we're still in the air. A light went out.
Unfortunately, we were had transmitter troubles last week during the week, and we were off the air for a couple of days. You may have noticed as a listener. Things are all good now. We're back on the air with repairs affected. Coming up today, later on CJSF, you will find Democracy Now! Here at 11 a.m. Sorry to those of you who missed it for a couple days, but we are back. Up at 12 noon is Wandering Rhythms. 3 o'clock, typically Tuesday, and lots more great programming coming up here on CJSF. This is a report about some funny business during the recent by-election in Montreal, where signs critical of Israel, election signs critical of Israel, were removed. And here's a report from our friends at CKUT.
Monday's by-election in La Salle et Mar Verdun is making headlines for the Bloc Québécois' win, a blow to the Liberals, who have held that seat since its creation in 2015. But there's another story behind the by-election, too. One of a local advocacy group who say they followed all the rules and tried to make a difference, but were silenced by the city. La Salle et Mar Verdun for Palestine member Hope Phillips tells CKUT that when Liberal MP David Lametti gave up his seat, LEV for Palestine saw their chance to mobilize, spreading the word about the war in Gaza and the federal government's role in it. Justin Trudeau announced the by-election on July 28th. By the 29th, the group was officially listed as a third-party intervener with Elections Canada, a status that allowed them to put out messaging on a political issue without trying to get elected themselves.
I had the little announcements feed from the Prime Minister, the Senate, coming to my email. And so as soon as it was announced that the by-election was happening, we were allowed to start postering, and we were out on the streets with like a really big group of volunteers putting our posters up all around, specifically Wellington and Monk Street. And within, I think, 48 hours, all of our signs were gone.
One of the posters reads simply, La Salle et Mar Verdun for a free Palestine. The rest carry slogans like, Canadian bombs kill children in Palestine, and your taxes fund genocide in Gaza. Almost all of them ask the viewer to end Canadian support for genocide in Gaza. Palestine or Gaza is mentioned on all 7 of the signs, Israel on only 4. All have fine print on the bottom to conform with Elections Canada's rules, identifying the group, their contact details, and their status as a third party. And further below, they carry a warning. Tampering with, vandalizing, or removing the signs before Election Day can result in charges under the Canada Elections Act and the Criminal Code. Still, Phillips says the signs kept disappearing, and they say the city of Montreal is to blame.
Long story short, we went back out multiple times, put our posters back up, because we were like, okay, we're not going to be discouraged. We knew this was going to happen. The important thing is that the posters just are out there for as long as people can see them. So we did a couple of rounds, and pretty much consistently within 48 hours, the majority of them were taken down. And we were able to get some security footage that pretty clearly showed City of Montreal trucks stopping and having the little workers with their vests coming out and taking our signs down.
The July 31st security video was taken on Monk Boulevard by a local merchant, who we are keeping anonymous and shared with LEV for Palestine. Viewed by CKUT, it appears to show a red vehicle with the City of Montreal logo. A woman in work gear removes one of the group's signs from a pole and puts in the flatbed of the red pickup truck. The group says they ultimately lost half of their signs, almost 500 in total, with just under 100 returned.
So we're still trying to find out who exactly, within the city is responsible for, giving the order. Because we're still pretty much across the board having them say, no, it wasn't us, we weren't responsible, or we just did it once and that's it.
The group's lawyer sent a cease and desist letter on August 2nd, calling on the city to stop taking down the signs, to return any they'd taken, and to reimburse the group the roughly $2,000 they'd lost. Their lawyer, Manuel Johnson, told CKUT that the city initially denied involvement. But after he sent the security video, he says they acknowledged that city workers had taken down some of the signs in error, ultimately returning just shy of 100. CQT was not given a copy of that correspondence.
Then the city came back and said, oh, yes, indeed, We recognize that some of the signs were removed by our workers, but only, you know, it was like a partial recognition.
A city spokesperson refused to comment on the case when reached by CKUT, citing the possibility of legal action. But they did acknowledge that they'd received and responded to a cease and desist letter from the group's lawyer. The boroughs of Verdun and Sud-West similarly declined to comment, and LaSalle did not respond. One of the few public comments on the matter comes from a Verdun Borough Council meeting on September 3rd. When asked by Phillips, Verdun Public Works Director Martin Roberge acknowledged that around a dozen signs were taken down in error on August 12th, but that this was noted and corrected. He did not elaborate on what that meant. But he said he was surprised to hear that the signs continued to be removed, that this shouldn't be the case, and that, in principle, it shouldn't be city employees removing them.
Oui, bonsoir. Il y a eu une intervention malheureuse le 12 août d'une dizaine de pancartes. Ça a été relevé et corrigé. Donc, ce que vous me dites là, qu'il y en a encore, c'est très surprenant. Puis on va vérifier parce que, effectivement, le mot d'ordre, là, c'est une enseigne comme les autres pour les élections, etc. Donc, ça ne devrait pas arriver, mais je peux revérifier. Mais en principe, ça serait pas les employés municipaux, là, les nouvelles séries qui ont été enlevées. Là.
When Phillips responded saying that the only signs the group had returned had been from Monk Boulevard in the neighboring Sud-West borough, Verdun borough mayor Marie-André Mougy chimed in to add falsely that the August removal would have happened before the group was ever registered as a third party. The group's registration date is listed on Elections Canada's database as July 29th. And Phillips says the group went through the process of registering before the election was even called.
On va devoir vérifier parce qu'effectivement, c'était au tout début, au mois d'août, avant que vous soyez constitué en parti politique. Parce qu'après ça, c'est pas dans notre cours.
Phillips says this is just one example of the group's struggle to get a straight answer from city officials, who give the impression of not knowing what's happening on the ground or in the other two of the three boroughs in question.
I'm not sure if, like, there's somebody giving orders who's, like, kind of gone rogue and not talking to other people at the city. But we did, one of the subsequent times that our signs were taken down, and they pretty much always happen at night. A friend saw that happening and asked them, you know, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be taking down these signs. They're federal election signs, et cetera, et cetera. And the worker basically just said, I was told to take down any sign that had to do with Gaza specifically.
CKUT has not been able to verify this claim, but the group's lawyer, Manuel Johnson, says that whether the removals were intentional or simply the result of negligence, the city had a duty to be proactive. Under Section 325 of the Canada Elections Act, quote, no person shall prevent or impair the transmission to the public of an election advertising message without the consent of a person with authority to authorize its transmission.
Whether it was simple negligence or a concerted effort, the problem is for the democratic process is the message that it sends out to citizens. For the way that it will undermine citizens' confidence in the democratic process, you know? The idea in a democracy and the idea of freedom of expression is that all views can be expressed, even unpopular views or even controversial views. But here, I would like to point out that I don't think that this view of, again, of denouncing genocide. I actually don't think it's a minority view. I actually am quite convinced that the majority of Canadians agree with this point.
He also says the city should know better by now. During the 2015 federal election, the Communist Party and the organization Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, or BDS Quebec, saw their posters critical of Israel taken down by city workers. BDS Quebec was also registered as a third party under Elections Canada. In that case, the city admitted that the Ville-Marie Director of Public Works gave instructions to borough staff to remove the signs. Judge Sylvie Lachapelle ordered the city to pay $12,000 in punitive damages to BDS Quebec, finding the city's treatment of the issue inadequate, the court levied the $12,000 in damages as a deterrent, one that would, quote, encourage the city to take appropriate measures to avoid recurrence.
If it's the third time, and especially following the severe condemnation on 2015, there's no excuse for it. So pleading negligence or pleading ignorance doesn't work anymore in 2024 after you've been condemned by the tribunal already. Did you not give training to your city employees and say, look, so if you have any doubts about any signage that's going up during this period, do consult your supervisor.
Phillips, meanwhile, thinks it's no coincidence that once again, the signs being taken down have a pro-Palestine message.
No other signs have been touched. And with the precedent of the exact same thing happening with the BDS campaign from a couple of years ago, it seems pretty cut and dry that they're just like, these signs, we don't like these signs.
In the group's cease and desist, they requested only $2,000, a rough ballpark of what was lost just in printing and materials alone. Johnson says that further legal action is not off the table.
If they were condemned for $12,000, a $12,000 fine, a punitive damages in 2018, and then in 2024 they made the same violation, they can expect that this time we're going to be asking for a bigger fine because the $12,000 did not seem to work.
Still, he wouldn't commit one way or another. As the group learned, just because they have the right to something doesn't mean it's a smooth road to exercise it.
Again, as a lawyer, I would say we have excellent grounds for legal action, but that's a decision we're going to have to make. My clients will have to make, you know, because the legal process is not easy either.
At the end of the day, LEV for Palestine member Quinn Pruny says it's dispiriting that this is a result of trying to change politics through official channels.
It's just particularly ironic that all of these things are structured in order to, like, try to protect our democracy. We have a third party piece to our elections so that people can voice things in our elections that are not around a candidate, but issues that residents want to be, campaigned around, again, to protect our democracy. And it's just ironic that then our tax dollars went to taking down these signs that cost thousands of dollars. And because we have to adhere to a very specific budget, that even if we wanted to replace those signs, we are not allowed to. We can't. Like, basically, once those signs are thrown out, we have no ability to spend more money because we've reached the cap of our budget. We can do everything right, and that doesn't actually really matter.
The whole electoral process, there's a lot to be said, there's a lot of criticism to be made, but we made the choice to say we're going to operate within this system and we are going to, you know, jump through these hoops and use it as it was intended to so that they cannot criticize us and they cannot come after us because we've done everything exactly as we should, like good little citizens, like following the rules, and that means nothing. And that just got, like, completely disregarded. It brings up a lot of, like, cynicism of the whole process. Yeah, it really makes it feel like what's the point of all of these systems and of all these, like, you know, supposed federal protections if it doesn't mean anything because you're saying something that the local government doesn't like.
When reached for comment by CKUT, a spokesperson for the Commissioner of Canada Elections refused to comment on the allegations in question, citing a need for confidentiality in the complaints and investigations process. CKUT will follow this story as it develops. I'm Jules Bujal, reporting with the Local Journalism Initiative. Thanks for listening.
We're all aware of the challenges our online spaces present, like online hate and the spread of misinformation. But how can the average person make our online world more positive? Studies have shown it takes just 10% of the people in a community to set its values. We're all digital citizens, and we all have a role to play. Join Media Smarts, Canada's Centre for Digital Media Literacy, on October 23rd for Digital Citizen Day to help make our online world a better place to be. Visit digitalcitizenday.ca to find out how you can make a difference.
Are you passionate about skiing and looking for a way to give back this season? Join Canadian Adaptive Snow Sports and help us make a real impact by volunteering your time. From teaching adaptive skiing or snowboarding techniques to supporting our events, there's a role for everyone. Visit our website at www.cads.ski